And put it in context, the second time I ran on a for the House. I ran mm-hmm. unopposed and was elected. It's not very democratic, but sure nice to run with no opponent.
Yeah.
And we elected 38 House members in the party, and so we had what we referred to as a stomping majority.
Right.
And so that was one context I had, and then not many years, that was in 69, and mm-hmm. by 75 and ultimately 77, I changed location and changed from the, our party changed from a majority. Thank you, Derek. We don't get at this very often. And, excuse me.
Could I get you some coffee or tea? Or
no, I'm fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I just stopped and wet my whistle.
Okay.
So, my whistle is wet.
Okay. Oh, that's a really good one.
Yeah, poster size there, you know, life size.
Yeah, the genesis of this was...
That's good of all of you.
When I was...
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, Tony, I'll be...
There you are at the
yeah.
This is taken in the Senate phone booth, because I was speaking to a group, and I said there are some advantages of only having six, that Ma Bell donated a caucus room for us.
Exactly.
And it was pretty nifty, because when we shut the door, the light went on and the fan started.
Yeah, very nice.
So the editor, publisher of Klamath said, I'm going to send my photographer up and we'll take a picture of it. And they did, and that's
uh-huh.
it. And
yep, so that's great. The funny thing is, those phone booths are still there with no phones in them.
Yes, yes.
And it's not clear if you're supposed to go in there with your cell phone and it's really quiet or what, but they're still there.
Yep. Well, that was that those phone booths had their own culture
mm-hmm.
because you could get away from the floor, and they did have doors on them in addition to the two phone booths in the area. And that's where a lot of people just hung out.
Yeah.
And particularly in the Senate, not so much in the House.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... And they don't even the phone booths they have in the halls outside the entrances to the front, I think that Senate to the House. Do they still have phones in
them? I don't think they have phones in them either.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Well, it's a different society.
Yeah.
And I'm resisting it as much as I can.
Oh, yeah. No, my wife and I don't have cell phones. And
I don't either.
With all the stuff I do, radio stations get kind of ticked off. It's like, no, you know, you can leave me a message and I'll get back to you, really.
I'll get back to you.
It'll all work. It'll all work.
Oh, good.
So, the main thing that we're doing here is Vic asked me to write his biography.
Yeah, and I thank you for accepting that. That's
you're welcome. Yeah, and it was a joy. And he and I talked about what that would be.
Mm-hmm.
And his view and my view are the same, which is why I said yes and he offered.
Good.
Which is basically... there's Vic Atiyah, but it's Vic Atiyah in the context of the history and what was going on. So it's a biography, but it's really a good hard look at what was going on in the, especially the 70s and the 80s in Oregon, and because he was trotting the globe in the globe.
Well, and also in the 60s, he, in my view, and I didn't know, I knew who he was, but
mm-hmm.
he was part of the Young Turks.
Exactly.
And that's where I got there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was... somewhat active in local politics. Of course, he didn't run in, was running in Washington County or
mm-hmm.
West Multnomah County, both, I guess. And, no, in those days, you ran sub-districts and by county. So
yeah.
It was Washington County.
Yeah, Washington County, the whole thing.
Yeah. And so I knew who he was, and I had met him. And but I didn't start running myself until... or get involved in politics till 65, 64, 65, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
But I'd heard of him, and what I saw of him I liked. But he is a message, I hope, and you'll have to check this, but I firmly believe it was, he was an unsung hero in early days on movements that became identified with more progressive movements.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a photograph on the wall in front of the entrance to the House where I think that's the one where it is. It's standing, and they're doing a non-discrimination housing bill that he pushed through as a, might have been the Young Turks, but I think it may have been as a senator.
Mm-hmm.
And also clean water, and Vic were arm in arm, and that's even before I got here. So he has a, and of course you'll find out if you didn't know, I'm very biased in his behalf. and so is she, for that matter. so he did a lot of things that were more typical of the legislative body then than it is now.
Right.
We weren't expected to be teapotters or progressives or whatever. And I learned early on when they'd say, well, are you conservative or liberal? And I would say, ask me a question, I'll answer it, and then make your own judgment.
Yeah.
I've been trapped too many times saying I was conservative, and then I had some of my friends who were really conservative.
Right.
And I wasn't, you know, I was a rhino, as Lars Larson used to say.
Mm-hmm.
Still does. So he was just a very able legislator from the beginning, and I can't remember all the people that were in his class of Young Turks, but they were significant legislators in their own right.
Yeah.
So I hope some of that, gets into your biography.
It will, and the part of the reason is it's an interesting story, but part of the reason is by the time he becomes governor, one of his claims, which so far is absolutely true as I'm investigating it, is he knew more about taxes than anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And so as I'm tracing that back, just today in our archives, I was first time really picking up the boxes and stuff, which is always fun. But there he is in 1960, first term, doing stuff where he's taken the numbers home. He's worked it himself. He's done the homework. And he said, you know, when you come out and look at this, the political claims on both sides really don't seem to hold water. This is what's going on. So I'm finding that kind of, from the get-go, that kind of involvement in depth.
Well, he was always that way, and he was, I would say, rigidly, and I admire that, honest.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wasn't always right, but he was right more right. He was right more, and he was wrong. He was more right than most.
Mm-hmm.
And but he told you something, he believed it, and it was probably true.
Yeah. Person I interviewed yesterday is Mike Donahue, who's a Channel 6 anchor, and he went to Syria with Vic when they went on that trip when he was governor.
My gosh.
But Mike was talking about meeting him, and the first time he met him was as a intern reporter in 1968, and Vic just scared the bejeebers out of him.
I can't believe that.
Well, it's because it was Vic was being an official state legislator.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reporter was asking questions, and Vic was, stern.
Yeah, Vic, yeah.
But then as Mike got to know him, it's like, God, he's such a pussycat.
Yeah.
much later on. But when he said, as I was thinking about Vic, he's the Boy Scout law.
Mm-hmm.
And he called up the Boy Scout law, and he went through it. And, boom, 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 all the way down.
The story behind that, too, the people that are most influential to me, in my life was Starl Austin, who was the deputy adjutant general for many years and passed away a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I served in the Air Guard, and he was our Air Guard leader. And Vic Atiyah, and both were Silver Beavers in Boy Scouts. And Boy Scouts meant a lot to both of them.
Yeah.
And it showed.
Yeah.
60, 70 years later.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Marvelous people. So I always thought that was appropriate that those two people learned the Boy Scout law and lived it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely lived it. So let's get into some of these questions. Talk to me about how you can be effective as a member of a 6 or 7 person caucus in the Senate.
Well, it'd be from my vantage point, very busy because Jason Bow, who was president of the Senate for most of my time in the Senate, when the Democrats controlled, learned early on, keep the renegades busy.
Okay.
And if they have a lot of time, they'll get you in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason was a very able administrator. I was not wild about his politics, but for the most part, but he was very able. So I think I had five or six committees. I had, what was it, 1 hour a week.
You had hardly any time.
That I had didn't have a committee meeting. Or Senate, or session.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that was a lesson I learned. I never had a chance. I was majority leader in the House and floor leader and minority floor leader in the Senate. And
right.
I never got an opportunity to exercise that little gem. Cause,
mm-hmm.
But that was one thing. You have to transport yourself back into those days. And it's not, I don't think it's the same. Of course,
mm-hmm.
I haven't served, but I was a lobbyist for the Judicial Department for a number of years. And back in those days, doing your homework was part of your credentials.
Right.
And you could figure you'd get challenged by even your own party,
mm-hmm.
by others in caucus or on the floor or interviews about how did you reach this conclusion and what are your facts to support your decision. And he was very good at that, as you already indicated. You know it, and that is he did his homework.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us learned early on that, and I regret this, but politics is by polls now,
mm-hmm.
I fear. In those days, the polls weren't so sophisticated, thank heavens, and they just didn't play the big role that, whether you're watching NBC or CBS or Fox or CNN, they'll always run up the polls because data is too easy to come
right.
by now.
Right.
And to get a poll or a percentage, you just hit a button and none of this
yeah.
working it out. So they try to make points that somebody's popularity has gone from 38.5 to 40.5, and that means this.
Right.
No, it doesn't. Could mean a lot of things, but not necessarily that. So in the older days, it was a little easier because you didn't. The what's my vote today
mm-hmm.
was not as important, and you were expected to have read the bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pelosi's, well, I hope we pass this so we'll have time to read it.
Right.
You know, that's not to say all of us every time read the bills, but for the most part, I think most of us, DNR, concluded that we're going to be held accountable
mm-hmm.
to knowing what was in the bill we just voted for. So most of us took it pretty seriously and tried very hard to do that, and that made it better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was a little easier to be a legislator in those days than it is now. You do your homework. There were some who had instant credibility in some areas,
mm-hmm.
and if they spoke, Staff Ansel, for instance, when Staff was in the House, he's a pig farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to talk about that, joke about that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ever get on the wrong side of a budget with Staff Ansel. You clean your clock, and everybody knew that he knew the budget forward and backward and upside down, and you couldn't play, well, we can just take it out of the highway. No, I can't go on the highway. Decades on, blah, 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 the whole thing. So, and Vic was the same way. They were so good, and in certain areas they were nearly perfect in knowing what's going on. So the level of discussion was not as snipey and as
right.
political as it is now. I just can't watch the stuff now much. But and Vic was always prepared. Lynn Newbery was another one of my greats. He
mm-hmm.
was, his father was Secretary of State, and Lynn grew up in, was it Talent?
Around
Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
Medford.
Yep.
And he
He's
was
my neck of the woods.
Yeah. Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Really?
I grew up in Southern Oregon.
Ah. He was just perfect. And then another guy that knew a lot about politics and government was Debs Potts.
Mm-hmm.
Grants Pass. And so that was just kind of the way most of us operated, and you never want to get caught pretending something happened that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So he had great credibility, did his homework, went to committee meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Congress and a variety of other states, as a matter of fact, the tradition was do your work. And most of us did.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was the editor of the Bush Booster, which is, they moved it now, but Bush School was not far from the Capitol when I was a sixth grader. And I learned a lesson there. I got to be editor because I could run the mimeograph machine.
There you go.
There's a lot of politics in that
yeah.
finding. And I wrote an editorial about how nobody was paying any attention on the floor during the debates.
Mm-hmm.
And how could they learn?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that I'm worried that somebody will find that because that is a credit to my misunderstanding of how the Oregon legislature right. operates. Because it's to debate the issues, not to tell everybody what the bill's about.
Yeah.
Because the presumption was they all read the bill.
Yeah.
And in my view, that was generally true. And so I, it was very dull because we didn't have the big debate. Another thing, although we can, the tradition has been, although we can amend on the floor like Congress,
mm-hmm.
we never did.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. Well, maybe exchanging an A for a the or a lie for a lay or something like that. They'd always go back to committee.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to wash your backside for these little sneaky amendments that came in. Also, the Constitution requires the relevance of an amendment to the body.
Right.
The statement. And, of course, Congress, you wind up with all kinds of
oh, yeah.
stuff. So we had things going our way that weren't our fault. The original Constitution and the tradition and legislature have kept it pretty straightforward. And that fit the style and intelligence and integrity of Vic and Lynn and
mm-hmm.
and the Democrats, Jason and others.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made it a lot easier than it is now.
How strong were the party ties? Vic talked a fair amount, not it wasn't a central thing, but he noted that you and he voted differently on bills fairly frequently.
Well,
so
I don't remember that.
Well,
we did.
He used the words. It happened several times, and then he talks about it again, and
yeah.
you know, it comes back.
No,
so was it because of the homework thing? Was it party discipline wasn't as strong? I mean,
we didn't have party discipline.
Okay, when you have that small caucus, you just
We didn't have it when it was 38. I used to joke about it. I can let my caucus vote their conscience.
There you go.
And I had to explain that when I'd go out to Wald at middle school, explaining that it's not as pessimistic as you might think.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few, and there were then, I don't think now, very few, quote, caucus votes.
Okay.
And number one, we don't have, this is Carson talking, didn't have then, at least, a party position on most things.
Okay.
So we never had or seldom had the confrontation of the party lined up in the gallery
mm-hmm.
with their Republican flags and
right.
saying, vote this way. It didn't work that way. And I remember one time Hank Hart, who was my tenure from down your way from
mm-hmm.
Medford, went up to, they were working on the computer stuff that we later adopted for OGIN. Well, not theirs. We did better, I think. I was just amazed.
We went to Washington.
Yeah, went to Olympia. And the position on the sales tax between the parties was diametrically opposed.
Hmm.
And I never thought that the Columbia Water had that much political influence. Because the Republicans on this side were steadfastly in support of the sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
And more income tax was an anathema.
Mm-hmm.
You go across the bridge, the water flows underneath, and over there, they were steadfastly Republicans, were opposed to the sales tax
mm-hmm.
and for the
mm-hmm.
And whether I got that right or not. But anyway, I learned that politics is situational or geographical, or as, what's his name, Tip O'Neill said, is local.
Yeah.
And so that was one thing, that we didn't have a lot of party confrontations. One of the delights we had was both parties had their biennial party convention.
Mm-hmm.
And they're elected, as you know, I think then and still now, because county precinct committee people and others, and they go to the statewide convention and they elect their presiding officers, or not, as sometimes they didn't,
mm-hmm.
both parties. And then they have a platform.
Mm-hmm.
We could hardly wait for the Democrats when they would go and come back with their platform. And their platform would be, no ownership of property in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were, because the people that showed up sometimes in the
mm-hmm.
Democrat caucus, as well as ours, I suppose, were not truly representative of the
right.
party out in the field. So my memory, and I may be fogged with age, was the Democrats spent most time running away from their platform.
Mm-hmm.
So there just wasn't the party to begin with to tell you how to vote, and then two, there wasn't the discipline.
Yeah.
So that was not a problem. There were some that were purely political votes, and R's voted, D's voted, mm-hmm. whatever. But the one I know that he never mentioned it, but after he had appointed me to the Supreme Court, sometimes after, but Bud Lent was still the, Bud Lent and I used to fight on the floor all the time, but when we got to the court, we both served on the Supreme Court, as he is Chief Justice, and I was brand new, we got along very well mm-hmm. for most things. And it was very interesting. There was you're too young, but one of the big fights Vic had and lost
mm-hmm.
because during the dark time of money disappearing, not disappearing, being scarce, they decided, I think it was the workers' comp fund, which had a really sizable
mm-hmm.
surplus.
Yeah.
So they took that surplus, put it into the general fund,
right.
and balanced the budget.
The raid, as they called it.
That's yeah. what they called it.
The yes.
So it came over, eventually came yeah. to us, and we ruled, I don't know whether it was unanimously, but it was heavily in favor of, against Vic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still wet behind the ears. My ink on my appointment was kind of damp still, mm-hmm. and I voted against him.
Mm-hmm.
Never said a word about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I didn't bring it up.
Yeah.
No, we did vote different ways. A part of it is just our backgrounds. Lawyers weren't particularly liked, although most people thought lawyers ran the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
That was not true. He was very deferential, but it was, and I don't know whether that played in it, but, we had a good personal relationship. We occasionally felt friends close enough to vote the opposite way.
Right.
I don't know that he ever killed anything that I cared about, or I killed anything other than mm-hmm. the raid on the
yeah, but that's
workers' comp.
You're different bodies at that point.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely. You know, yes.
Different constitutional duties and all
and,
that.
And
so,
yeah, yeah, and I didn't. I felt bad because it was contrary to what Vic wanted.
Right.
That's what I got
yeah.
paid for, is not caring about that,
exactly.
caring about what the Constitution required.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's great. So you're in there in 66, you're elected House, then you go to the Senate in 70. Talk to me about Tom McCall and then Bob Straw, but especially Tom McCall as governor. And the reason I'm asking this is when Vic decides to run for governor in 74, at some point, and he's never clear, and in his own mind, I think these things just come to him. He looked up there and said, you know, I can do that job. And that's when he decided, I should really look at this and throw my hat in the ring and mm-hmm. eventually become the nominee in 74. So talk to me about Tom McCall as a governor from your vantage point in the legislature. Looking at this, you know, we may be putting a statue of him in Washington, D.C. I mean, so...
Well, let me back up and give some context, and if I take too much of your time.
Oh, no problem.
Go.
I got batteries.
You do. You're smart. Somebody tipped you off. There's some things that are in our context that change some dynamics. That is, mm-hmm. the governor's office is 4 years.
Right.
It's not true across the country. Pretty much too. And we have limited to 2 terms.
Right.
So it's... one of those things, when you run for office, it's not only the electorate can decide that you're going to retire, but the Constitution says you
right.
retire. And I can assert that the Constitution says for judges, you can't serve past December 31 of the year you reach 75.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing about your ability or whether you want to go or you want to stay.
Right.
And so that's one of the factors one considers is... how long am I going to be there? What am I going to do? What's the rest of my life look like?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that played anything in Vic's experience, but I think Vic had a full understanding himself of how government works and perhaps even more important, how he thinks it should work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he liked Tom McCall. I liked Tom McCall very much. I remember when he ran against Edith Green, mm-hmm. and as I remember, got his clock cleaned. But,
yes.
And he, of course, he had that Massachusetts Prineville twang.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
I spent my life trying to figure out where's that coming.
Just
from?
As a sidelight, I grew up with people in Medford who had very strange accents, and
really?
Lo and behold, they were great nephews and nieces of Tom McCall.
You're
is
kidding.
That right?
When the book came out, I was talking with a family friend. She said, "Oh yeah, that's my uncle. That's my cousin." It's like, no wonder.
No wonder you were brought up on that.
So I have my copy of the McCall book is always, you know, there's cousin this and that.
How funny.
Oh, that's wonderful. I really like Tom, and he would get on a track, and hard to get him off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he had several people, but two people I really liked, Ed Westerdahl mm-hmm. and Ron...
Oh, yeah, Ron.
Schmidt,
yeah. And I got along great with those
yeah.
guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up... I got to work with Westerdahl when Tom first ran for governor.
Mm-hmm.
No, first ran for Secretary of State. And I volunteered my help, which wouldn't have been much. And it didn't come to pass, but then Tom did a good job and ran, and I think did a good job. And he was very good of, now we call them narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, the one, and this is from me, I remember listening to, when I was going into college, I would listen to KEX, because that was my touch. I was down the peninsula, it was my touch with Portland and Salem. And I found that when I was in the legislature and up here, I listened to KGO because
mm-hmm.
that was my touch
yeah.
with the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And I was driving home from something or to something, and there's a guy talking on the radio on one of the talk shows and said, you know, this gas crunch. He said, what you ought to do is if your license plate's end in an odd number, you can get gas on a day that ends,
mm-hmm.
a calendar day that ends in odd and even the contract. And it wasn't more than 24 or 36 hours that Tom McCall came out with this really good idea to cut down the lines at the pump.
And he knew he'd been up in the middle of the night and couldn't sleep on KGO.
I'm betting that. And I'd put money on it, and I'm not a betting man. But he pulled that off.
Yep.
And his confrontation, constant confrontation with Straub on the Greenway.
Yeah.
And what it was and how it was used, and he kind of stole the lunch on that, because I really think it was Bob Straub's push.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I have divided loyalty. I got appointed to the circuit bench by Bob Straub,
mm-hmm.
and I got appointed to the Supreme Court by Vic Katia, a Republican Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But Tom was an opportunist, in, I would say, a good sense. In
mm-hmm.
other words, he's kind of in a crouched, leaping position.
Yeah.
And had... in the early days, had a significantly facile mind that he could move from subject to subject and move across. One of the funniest ones, it was that Bob Davis that told the story about we had Agnew. Spiro was
mm-hmm.
our vice president. And Tom was speaking somewhere. And one of Bob Davis, it was also Medford, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Roseburg is where he worked for the lumber company, but he was from Medford. One of his jobs was to make sure after Tom was through giving a speech
mm-hmm.
that he kind of guided him off the stage and didn't let the press, you bad guys
right.
in the press, to get in there and talk to him. And so somehow Bob, as he tells the story, didn't get over there in time, and the press got Tom and asked him about Spiro Agnew.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the knife and the shawl quote
yeah.
came from.
Yeah.
That was just good press for a long time. And Bob said, I really muffed that one. I didn't get there. But Tom was like that. And
yeah.
But he could spin a story, and I liked working with him. He held a grudge, and most people do to
mm-hmm.
some degree. And but we'd have the meetings in his little office, off
mm-hmm.
the ceremony office, there back in the car. And if we didn't perform very well, then he'd let us know
mm-hmm.
that we were voting the wrong way or we needed to
mm-hmm.
help him more and this sort of stuff. But I was comfortable working with him. Of course, when Straub became governor, they didn't ask me much what I thought about
right.
which way the state ought to go, or any of the others, five of us. And so I didn't have that opportunity. But I liked Bob and enjoyed working with him. But Tom really was kind of a nice ride because a little edgy, didn't know quite where he was going to go with his speech. And I was in the guard, and so I don't know if I was introducing Tom or something, but it was right when we had thwarted one of his tax plans in the Senate. We had not gone that way. And Tom was still one of the... And I just lived in fear that I was going to be the subject matter of his speech.
Right.
He did make some remarks to my
lack of... He was so colorful.
Yeah, but he was a lot of fun.
Yeah. The impression when I'm talking to people about Vicatea, if they didn't know him, is that I think it's partly because when he ran for governor, especially in 74, but in 78 as well, the Oregonian editorial page said he was conservative. And so, and that just kind of floored him because he was just Vic to him. But they were, you know, looking for labels and that kind of stuff. So when you talk about land use in Oregon, a lot of people have the impression that Vic opposed it. And Vic didn't oppose it, and his reasoning is just fantastic. From where his house was,
sure,
he watched that little road become a four-lane highway with strip malls.
Absolutely.
And he said, darn straight we need land use planning, because this is happening. But when, you know, Tom McCall takes credit for that, they go back to D.C. together, testify before Congress and all this kind of stuff. And Vic discovered Tom didn't really know what was in the bill. spent the night before their testimony in the hotel room saying, okay, this is what's in the bill. Here's this. I'm right next to you. If anything comes up, you just say, well, and all that come in. But Tom eventually held grudges against Vic that never went away.
That doesn't surprise me.
And
he held a lot of grudges, I think. And I, to this day, I don't know that Vic ever held one.
Yeah, I don't either.
I couldn't. Maybe back in the Green Bay Packer days he had some.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, that's an interesting part. And, of course, my ego requires me to point out that I had some experience of that with Senate Bill 10. Was that the one? The precursor to land use planning.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that
you started that really early.
Oh, yeah, that was in the House in 1969. And Tom Hartung and I and Bob Davis and ultimately Corny Bateson, I think, who was then in the Senate, it came out of Wes Gavarsten. I don't know whether you've heard that name, but Wes Gavarsten was a great planner for Mid-Willamette Valley Planning Council. And he was the one that pushed on land use planning and did a lot of the, he and Willamette Valley Planning and others did it. But he was my guiding light when we eventually got the first one. And the first one was voluntary. It put the governor in a position to encourage everybody to do it. Well, it's like, as long as you're talking about nice things happening, they're with you, but when you said, well, how are we going to pay for this, then all of a sudden the crowd quiets down and then builds back up. So it passed, but it was a mess to try and move forward. So that's when Senate Bill 1 came out, and that's the one Hartung and I, and Hartung had similar stories from Washington County. He lived out closer to Hillsborough, but out there. But no, Vic was a strong supporter, as I remember. And so it, yeah, it was, but that was Tom.
Yeah.
He was a quick learner and up to a point. And, but no, that's my memory is how many are surprised how many good things way back Vic had a hand in.
Yeah.
And he never really got credit for.
Well, and he never tooted his horn.
No, of course not.
That's when I was talking to the reporter yesterday. He was talking about all these things that he later found out Vic was in the middle of.
Yeah.
He had no idea.
Yeah.
And how would you? And I know talking to Denny Miles, you know, Denny would get so frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, great. So as governor, you're having weekly press availability. That's good. But when we do stuff, we need to go out and stand on a stump and say, hey, wave a flag.
Yeah.
And that's not Vic.
Nope, that's not Vic. He was a good leader. One of the things I should mention is that even when he went against you, or you went against him, it didn't seem to tear the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And when you plan to come back and work the next day with the same guy, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That kind of an attitude.
Yeah.
And he always did. I realized when I opposed him, which my story is. not very often, but I didn't have to worry about, if there was one elderly lady in the house, if you voted against one of her pet bills, you paid for it with your life.
Mm-hmm.
For the next, if your name was on the bill, then the next few votes you were going to get a Nova.
Yeah.
And but I never had that feeling with Vic, and that's how we ran the caucus. And of course, I didn't get to work in the House, but I did get to work with others in the House, and some were very gentle and some were pretty tough.
Yeah.
But Vic was tough-minded, but he didn't take it out on your skin. So.
Yeah, yeah. One of the interesting dynamics I'm going to be looking at as people have done research on this kind of thing is Vic was never in the majority. When he was governor, he had a Democratic legislature. And so... you know, what does that do? Because people talk about it as a compromiser and things like that. He had no choice.
Yeah.
That was the reality. And then another interesting dynamic that comes up with him is he only had one legislative race that was close at all. So he never had the experience of having to go back and really fight for his seat and do that kind of thing. And so what does that do for your certainty of yourself? For the way that you hold yourself as a legislator, those kinds of things. And people have done some really interesting research across the country looking at the dynamics of those kinds of things.
Doesn't it depend on the personality of the
individual? Yeah, personality is an important thing. When we look at it today, you'd think if people don't have that kind of competition in Texas, they then create a little fiefdom.
Yeah.
They didn't want a fiefdom.
Who would want a fiefdom in Texas?
Yeah, exactly. But it's just different cultures.
Yeah.
As well as different personalities.
Yeah.
But it's just fascinating to look at things that he felt so strongly about and who he was. But it's like, you were never challenged in a real way with that. Mm-hmm. It's not until he runs for the statewide offices that he has tough fights.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has doozies.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not really until then.
Well, I think one of the things I thought was most interesting is after he lost to Straub, I'll say in the first election, my opinion is that he survived that loss better, at least within my group, which were Republican, but also Democrat, came away head held high.
Mm-hmm.
Not only himself, his confidence, but among the public.
Mm-hmm.
He got a standing ovation, as I recall it, over at the Dorchester Conference.
Yeah.
After losing.
Yeah.
And and from that time on, people said, you're going to run in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And almost everybody, very little opposition to him running again. He's a loser.
Yeah.
But no, not really. He lost the late race, but he's no loser.
Yeah.
And so his momentum just increased, and then he became governor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he took on.
It'll be my next question, because he specifically talked about walking into that Dorchester conference with you.
Yeah.
And everybody turned and just gave a huge ovation.
Well, that wasn't for me. That was for...
No. Yeah.
And that really was surprising. I've thought about it quite a bit, is that he ran such a good campaign, did such a good job and respectable, that even in defeat, he won.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in my mind, it was no question, but he was going to run again in 4 years. And I didn't know whether Straub's going to run again. Of course, I've known Straub for quite a while, as I mentioned. And I knew him back when he was county commissioner in Lane County.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when he ran against Howard Belton, Mr. Integrity, for state treasurer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of the guy's, Marty Brandenfels.
Oh, Martin Brandenfels.
Yeah, well, the story behind that, and it's my memory, so you better do your own research. But Martin's dad was from St. Helens and invented hair restore, grow hair.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So poor Marty, who was he a Fidel at Oregon?
I think so. He was at Oregon when I was with.
Yeah, it was either Fidel or, I don't know, it doesn't make a difference. But he was a deputy DA and blew the whistle. And Straub hadn't been heard of statewide. Mm-hmm. He hadn't been outside of Lane County, and Belton and Mr. Integrity had run and won and was on his way, I think, to his reelection. And Marty turned one of Straub's campaign parties in Eugene. And under Oregon law, I think it's still true, you can't sell drinks without an OLCC permit.
Mm-hmm.
And well, they turned him in. So it was a big flare-up that campaign of, well, actually, that Lane County Commissioner Bob Straub broke the law selling booze at one of his campaign without an OLCC license. Well, that just boomeranged because, you know, how Oregonians are, they think, oh, come on, you know, what are you doing? And so Bob's just started building and building and building. And of course, Pat was an extraordinary sidekick, in my view, Pat and his wife. And
he was a nice man.
He was a nice man.
He was kind of bumbled a little bit. But
Well, the ability to make small talk is greatly underrated.
Yeah.
And I remember one day we'd been talking about it. Bob was very uneasy in the crowd, and the crowd could be 6-year-olds. It didn't have to be intellectuals or faculty or anything like that. And somebody had a certificates awarded for
artistic ability.
Yeah, some kind of art. And so the 20 children in the ceremony office standing there holding their pictures, and the governor went methodically, because he was fairly methodical, around the room saying, congratulations, congratulations. He went with one girl, and for some reason he said, did you draw that? And of course, that's what the whole program was, to award the people. She said, well, of course. Like that in the room. But that was Bob. He didn't mean anything nasty about it or anything else. He just wasn't in the day.
And he could never remember anybody's name.
No.
And he had a special person to follow him around and say, that's so-and-so.
Yeah.
What's her name? I can't remember what her name was.
I thought the worst thing ever happened to me was when they came in and I was standing on the dais in the Senate. This was, I think it was on the court. And he was up there, and he was by the microphone, and we were going to do the Pledge of Allegiance. And he talked like he knew it, but he was kind of like the guy at the South African sign language. He just rattled on all kinds of words. I thought, how am I going to get out of here? You know, it's just, oh my.
Funny. One thing that we inherited into the Pacific Archive with all of Vic's stuff is we have a bunch of campaign buttons, tons of them. And we also have stick-ons. And the stick-ons were a specific request from Dolores. Because she'd go to some campaign event, and she'd say, put it on the person, and by the time she got around, if she saw the sticker, she'd already talked to you.
Oh.
So she'd sticker the whole place. Good.
How's she doing?
Not well.
Not well.
She's basically, she doesn't have much mind left at all. And then she and Vic fell at the same time, basically. And just within, I think it might be 2 months ago now, they finally got her into a place that they're happy with.
Yeah.
Rehab place, but, you know, money issues and all that stuff.
I got a Christmas card from her that was signed, but I was wondering if she did it.
Probably not. Yeah, probably not.
That's another thing about Vic. I just was constantly amazed at how persistent he was of going to funerals.
Mm-hmm.
And one, I remember particularly, and he drove himself all the way over to mm-hmm. Bend mm-hmm. for, was it Jim Westwood?
Westfall, wasn't it?
No.
Okay. Anyway, it was.
I think it was Jim Westwood. It was in the, was a Bend lawyer and was in the guard, and he and, I don't know why they became friends, but they were,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and yeah. the governor drove all the way over by himself from yeah. Portland for the funeral there, and then Gary Lockwood and I drove up to Ken Jernstead's
right.
funeral, yeah. and Vic drove all the way up.
Vic and Vern, yeah.
And
it's amazing.
Yeah.
Just loyal.
Yeah.
Just last year, I was hearing from people who were at one of the old-timer things,
mm-hmm.
and the talk of the whole thing was that Vic had driven wherever it was by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he even drove yeah. himself to the hospital when he
came. Oh, yeah. yeah, for the first time, yeah.
Gosh.
Hmm.
Yep.
Great guy.
So, you get appointed to the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
and we talked a little bit about your, you know, one of your early votes in that was on the Safe Raid.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about the relationship between the court and the governor while Vic's in there. From it's especially, you know, bringing you know Vic. Talking to some other people around Vic, their impression was that when you became judge, there was you kind of separated out because you had a role to play. And so talk about that, you know, the way that worked for you.
Well, yeah. Actually, when I went over there in 82,
mm-hmm.
I'd come from Marion County Circuit Court, and we had quite a bit of government cases
right.
in Marion County. And so you learn just not to talk about things that are pending or likely to be pending before your court. And so we never talked much about those. He didn't bring it up. I didn't bring it up. I didn't think it was one of the things that occurred to me was maybe to ask him his insight.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, no, wait a minute. That's the coziness that the public gets, even though it's innocent or well-meaning,
right.
that kind of backstage discussion. Ain't Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't do it, and I didn't do it. Where we did work is on appointments.
Okay.
And I say work. If I had somebody that somebody said would be a good person, and I remember had quite a lengthy discussion with the governor when Betty Roberts
mm-hmm.
had announced that she was going to file and she was going to win, and then the question came whether the governor's going to put somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And we had quite a conversation about that, about the good and the bad, and I was of the opinion that Betty would probably win.
Mm-hmm.
First woman,
mm-hmm.
a very able campaigner, I thought. I said, you know, it's your choice, but I think this might be a chance to turn it into a favorable opportunity mm-hmm. by appointing the first woman in the history of the state of Oregon to the Supreme mm-hmm. Court. I overstated that because he did and it didn't, but
mm-hmm.
that's my take on it. And so we did confer from time to time on what, and that was not uncommon. I think all the governors, and I have except one example, would consult the court. And I see nothing wrong with that. What is it you need? What are you looking for?
Yeah.
And this sort of stuff. I don't know that they still do it. I do know that Peterson was chief, and he had kind of asked Gillette to go over and talk to Neil Goldschmidt.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have anything on no plate, nothing mm-hmm. to talk about, but say if you have any questions about what our needs are, or budget, or our administrative view on what's going on, let us know. We'll be glad mm-hmm. to respond. And he and I'd forgotten quick words, but in no circumstance would he ever ask us what we thought we wanted. This is Goldschmidt.
I hear that from more people about Goldschmidt.
Yeah, I mean, and Mick and Goldschmidt had played basketball against each other
yeah.
when they were in high school. They
yeah.
went back, not close buddies,
yeah.
but it just dumbfounded us
yeah.
because we had the opportunity to work with, well, you know, most of the people there, and they were interested in say, well, we need somebody who's got trial experience.
Right.
And that's good or bad, but whatever it may be. But I remember vividly when Gillette came back almost drawn. He not only didn't want us to tell him who we thought would be a good judge, he didn't want to hear from us on anything. And we said, okay.
There you go.
There you go.
About 2 years into Goldschmidt's governorship, someone who worked in his office came up because, you know, Vic had set things up and he thought he, you know, made it easy. He went on the first trade trip with him, and Goldschmidt just started chopping people, you know, as soon as he got in there, started chopping people, changing things, and making it harder to work. You know, mm-hmm. It was the governor and this wall,
yeah.
And how do you get through the wall? But about 2 years later, someone who was in Goldschmidt's office saw Vic and said, "You made this look a lot easier than it really is."
It's good line. Good line.
That's perfect. If I can figure out how to do that, that might be the good title of the book.
Yeah. Made it look easy.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, that's so true. An interesting part, Goldschmidt was a, and I have a lot of, up to a point, similar between Goldschmidt and Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure they really wanted to have the office, but they love campaigning.
Yeah.
And they are very good at it.
Yeah.
And, or community organizing, we now call it.
Mm-hmm.
It was apparent that Neil did not like being, from my vantage point, did not like, he liked being governor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know those things. Certainly wasn't the salary. But when he came before committees, he was struggling.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know the detail. And that's understandable. The governor's got a lot going on. But, man, so that was a revelation to us. But Vic was always there. About the only thing I ever talked about was personnel needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was mostly with Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't have much to say about who was running for office.
Right.
None of us did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Vic leaves office. Talk about Vic as a post-gubernatorial kind of guy. What did you see?
Well, one of them I mentioned, his presence when it, first of all, none of it was worth any votes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say, well, he's not trying to pick up some votes.
Right.
And he fulfilled the senior retired state official role very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and we'd seen from time to time, and I always enjoyed it at functions.
I heard you.
Very persistent.
Yeah. Vic would never be that rude. But he was present and was always there to consult if he had a question about, and I didn't have many because
mm-hmm.
everybody knows is busy in another, still looking for permanent work in another field. And kind of maybe the example, he was still governor, but he transitioned to the head of the Oregon National Guard.
Yeah.
Seamlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe he had any military experience. I'm not sure of that. And he was revered by the people with whom he worked. One of my favorite pictures was at a passing review up at the field, International Airport, on the guard side. And I think I was the adjutant general for that one or something. But anyway, I escorted him somewhere, and we were talking and both smiling. It's a very good picture of me, which I appreciate, and a typically good picture of Vic.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just comfortable with people.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he had a way of letting you know it. And most everybody else in politics have little things that keep you from forgetting that they're not really people. They are golden people.
Right.
And Vic didn't have any of that.
Mm-hmm.
He just was a super neat guy. So, our lives did not cross very often, funerals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was always pleased to see him. Trying to think of what other circumstance, guard occasions. But he stayed pretty active. Not in politics, as I recall. Of course, I was not in politics anymore. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to be talking to people. You know, all the Republicans would go circle through his office when they're thinking of running for this side or the other. And some of them he'd, you know, pat on the head and say good luck, and some he'd worked really hard with.
Yeah.
And so one of the last I know that he worked really hard with was Chris Dudley. And so I talked to Chris Dudley at the memorial service, and I'm going to be talking to him for the book. You know, what was it, you know, what is that like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how seriously do you take somebody who hasn't been in office for 30 years, you know, with the current things going on? But in my talking to him, and one reason he chose me for the writing, you know, he was following stuff a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And behind the scenes, people were telling him things. And so he was, you know, in the middle of it in himself all the way up till the end.
Yep. Well, I just assumed that. Two of my favorite role models were people that lived into their 90s,
mm-hmm.
and were up till the near end. They were viable people who cared about the community and worked to make it better.
Yeah. And, so anything else you want to tell me about Vic?
Can you think of anything?
I don't know. He was just such a sweet person. He, you know, we'd see him anywhere. We had our youngest son, Stephen, met him several times. And one time you all went out to the steam up.
Oh, yeah, that at Brooks.
Uh-huh. But we'd see him anywhere, and he'd say, "Hi, Stephen." And of course, Stephen was just about that big.
Mm-hmm.
But he, you know, he remembered little kids. And
yeah.
Yep. And he had a good staff.
He had a great staff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where's Denny Miles now? Is he
just down, you know where Jerry Thompson lives? Down in the golf course south of town.
In Illahee.
Yeah.
Is he out there?
Yeah, he moved there last summer. They can throw a Frisbee from each other's house.
I was going to say, because he married a nice
Statesman
lady.
Journal lady.
Yeah.
Right.
In fact, I think maybe the last time I saw Vic was at McMillan's memorial service a year or so ago,
mm-hmm.
when John McMillan died.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry is a wonderful person.
Yeah.
She's really funny.
She's great. And she's telling me stuff that she's never told anybody. So.
No kidding. Okay.
That could be dangerous.
Well, it could be dangerous, but it's also, you know, boy, kind of is the first woman, but also someone who really had her ear to what was going on.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you know,
yeah.
People would say stuff and not even realize she was kind of there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she remembers stuff.
She's frightfully loyal, and I appreciate that.
We used to have so much fun. I was Wally's secretary, and we were all in the same office together.
Oh, the bullpen.
With Gary Bauer and.
Yeah. Well, it was the. There were only six of us. Didn't need much space.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And Glenna.
Yeah, Glenna. Glenna Hayden and.
Yeah.
Gary Bauer.
Too bad Glenna is gone, because she knew an awful lot about everything going
on.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my contacts is the person who replaced her. I can't remember the name. I've got tons of
bazillion.
Names.
Oh, yeah.
I bet you do.
Basically, Denny and Jerry have emptied out their Rolodexes.
Couldn't find two better people. But
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they know how the world turns, too.
Yes.
Yep. Absolutely.
Good.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much.
Well, I'm sorry just to prattle on, but
if I think
of anything else, I'll
let me know.
Give you a call. What is your phone number?
I'll give you my card.
Okay.